Blog Talk Radio.
Hello there, it's Sunday evening, and this is the Sunday Show, brought to you by Roundtree7.com, that's the number 7, Roundtree in front of it. And today, that captain, David Williams, is joining us to speak about a post. Actually, the topic I'm sure will bloom outside of these lines, but the topic is around his post last, it was 2 years ago, actually, in February of 2012, and it's been reposted by several publishing online entities of our first featured science report by David Williams called Of Parallel Universes and Weeping Angels, and it talks about the quantum theories and all of the, you know, the quantum locking, and it's Bohr versus Everett, really, what you were down to, isn't it, David?
Yeah, it was. There was a physicist by the name of Hugh Everett came up with an idea that was a radical departure from the norm at the time. It was called the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum physics, and he came up with something a little bit different, and it actually was a lot different, and he wrote up a paper and actually presented it in front of Bohr, and he was rejected for it. He was ostracized, and he was so discouraged because of that, he went on to Rand Corporation, but that paper sort of came back around. It was written back in 1957, and in an indirect way, because of a string theory and quantum cosmology, it came back. So, very interesting story in itself. But I'll get back to where. How it came about and came back around was they had the original theory of how the universe began, it's called Big Bang. Everybody's heard that. It's even a television series named of it. But, you know, they had some weird anomalies that they just couldn't figure out. One was that, you know, when the universe began, the Big Bang, that it would eventually start slowing down the universe. And they started taking some more accurate measurements. And they found out that things weren't slowing down, things were speeding up, and they couldn't figure that out.
And, this is, of course, when we get into dark energy.
Exactly, yes. And so in the 1980s, a couple of brilliant guys by the name of Alan Guth and Andre Linde, they came up with something called inflationary theory. And inflationary theory was that the universe began in a quantum vacuum, and going through the math and everything, they came up with there's a circumstance where gravity could be not attracting but sort of act like something in reverse, that it would propel, and it would propel in exponential fashion. So
like
suddenly
a bit of antimatter activity.
Exactly, yeah, in a way. Uh-huh. And, you know, so they had this this condition, and then when they had this rapid, what they call inflationary rapid expansion, or E-folds, which happened at an incredible rate, is like 10 to the 26th increase in size every billionth of a second.
Wow.
And there were 60 what they call E-folds that occurred. So if you can imagine that, I mean, that's something that's so large you can't even put your head around that. But
that's the definition of eternity, man.
Yeah, exactly. But another thing they introduced was that the quantum vacuum, and you know, I've heard it explained this way before, and it's a really good way to explain it, is think of this huge piece of cheese, and suddenly this cheese expands, and as it expands, you know, say it's Swiss cheese, as it expands, these little holes appear in the cheese. You know, you have these energy imbalances, and these holes appear. And these holes, in the inflationary theory, these holes are a universe. Like, our universe could be one particular hole, and what's around it is just a nothingness, a vacuum.
Like dark matter?
Vacuum, not in a source. Excuse me?
Like something like dark matter?
No, dark matter comes in a different circumstance.
Okay, go ahead.
That's
then.
What string
right.
theory. But okay, and you have other holes that are popping up, a bubble, if you will. And these bubbles, different universes. Ours is a universe. Another bubble is a universe, and it's constantly expanding. The cheese is expanding, and as it's expanding, you can see how the universe is accelerating. You know, because the boundaries of that universe is accelerating in the big cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And each one of these bubbles in the big cheese, it may be that the conditions of the physics or the natural laws may be completely different. In one, you may not have matter at all. You may have dark energy that isn't balanced like our universe, where it doesn't allow matter to you know, form. Or you may have another one where it doesn't allow a particular type of energy. And if you take the concept of infinity and wrap that around, then in one of these bubbles, you know, because of infinity and an infinite amount of combinations, in one of these bubbles, it could be the circumstances exactly like this Earth that we have here in our universe. We may have a bubble that has something exactly like us that, you know, maybe there's a David Williams talking on the phone talking about. So, you know, it's a mind-boggling concept. It really is,
and you know, you feel so small when you think of just the universe as we've known it in the past, and when you get it even bigger than that, it makes you feel like you're almost subatomic, you know?
Yeah, and the thing about it is a lot of the math of that just happens to match up with some of the superstring theory, of quantum, where you have 11 dimensions, 9 of them being the physical with vibrating strings of energy. So it's sort of tied together in that way, and a lot of the numbers came together where I think in string theory that it has x to the 511th power of different variations of strings. Well, you know, that it ties into the amount of universes that may be possible. And when you have that amount of universes, it may seem boggling to us of how many combinations, but when you have an infinite amount of combinations, eventually you have a combination that's exactly like the one combination we're living in.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Go ahead, Glenn.
I mean, I understand M string theory, basically from the multidimensional point of view, because I can wrap my little brain around a lot of those ideas or theories, especially when I begin to think of, well, where am I thinking right now? Where is that going on at? It's interesting because thought, time, it's like oxygen. I think that we are really beginning to discover where thinking takes place, because we're developing technology that actually can capture the dynamic of it in another way other than what is considered physical. You know where I'm going with this, David?
Yeah, you know, in string theory, when it first came out, it was supposed to be the theory of everything, you know, where, here's this one simple thing. It goes into atoms, you know, neutrons, protons, and then it gets down into quarks. And then it goes down even further, and it has something called a string of energy that's almost like a little loop, but it's vibrating with energy. And the different frequencies that it vibrates at, it creates the matter of the particles.
Exactly.
And those particles would be x to the 511th power, different variations of
–
but the thing about the string theory is it got very complicated. It has like I said, 9 physical dimensions. It has 11 total dimensions. And doing the math in 3 dimensions is tough enough, but when you start doing things in 11 dimensions,
right.
It's sort of...
This is all based on physics now, right?
Yeah, it's all based on physics.
That's something I'm very, very weak in, so I'm going to have to do my homework and do a lot of reading in physics, because it sounds absolutely fascinating to me at this point. It's just mind-boggling at this point.
here's another thing. When you get down into the quantum field, which is just a negatively charged area of empty space, but this is where quarks can condensate. Think of like, you know, condensating and evaporating on moisture on glass. But, you know, you can also look at it, too, and here's like another kind of a blue smoke pipe dream theory is it's really jumping from one reality or one universe to another. It's really not condensating and evaporating. It's like the frequency of light. We can see white light, but we can't visually see the ultraviolets, the electromagnetic waves, and all that.
Yeah, but they're still there, right? Yeah.
But they're still there, and it just happens to.
That's a very good point because our concept of reality is really sort of very limited. For instance, what we conceive of a, say a building.
Yeah,
it's nothing there. I mean, if you were to compress, say, like the Empire State Building down into its solid space with no space in between the atoms, it would only be less than the size of a grain of rice.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I've heard described that the entire matter of everything that man has made could be put in the space of a football.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
Now, again, these are all theories that haven't been proven yet.
That is actually fact. That has been, amount of space between atoms.
Rip out all the matter in between or the non-matter or whatever it is that's between atoms. You rip out all that stuff and just get it down to the nitty-gritty. That's what you'd be left with.
There's a lot of space between atoms. So what is there is an electromagnetic field that the magnetic bond of them is what can't be broke. That's why you can walk across the floor of that building, even though there's more space than there is matter between them. It's the electromagnetic attraction that really is holding it all together.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. A lot of physical forces working all at once.
Another example, just giving you an idea of how the concept of what we conceive of reality is different from what it actually is. I'll take this Thor's hammer. You know, Thor's hammer, you know, the myth is supposedly made from the inside of a neutron star. And I saw a paper that was written up that if it actually was taken from the neutron star, that the mass of that hammer would be just a huge something to the 123rd power tons of matter. And the mere fact of dropping his hammer from his waist to the ground would produce more than 2,000 times a 50 megaton hydrogen bomb.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, we're talking about enough energy and stuff that just its existence there would distort the Earth's orbit around the sun.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
And distort all of physical space. It'd rip our universe apart.
So, I mean, what we think is reality is only our perception. And there's also been another theory that there is a point that we, you know, because of the human mind, cannot even comprehend. You know, maybe there's going to be a point where we can't even comprehend the complexities that create the universe. You know, maybe it's going to go beyond our intellectual capabilities.
Most people think in terms of, you know, the regular, like Einstein type of physics. When you get down into the quantum physics, for instance, if you want to just take the electron of the atom, the more you know of its position, the less you know of its velocity. The more you know of its velocity, the less you know of its position, which is just the inverse of time versus velocity for acceleration or speed, you know, the regular physics.
Well,
that's
uncertainty principle,
uncertainty, right. And string theory was supposed to be the mathematics that tied the two, the quantum physics and the regular everyday physics, together. That's what they were
doing. It's a funny thing, and Hugh Everett, back in 1957, when he wrote his Many Worlds Interpretation of Quantum Physics. See, the multiverse is not the same thing as the Hugh Everett interpretation. It's like application of different things. One's got cosmology, the other is quantum physics. But Hugh Everett's quantum physics, he said that, for instance, Schrodinger's cat that's in the box. If
right, Schrodinger's cat.
Yeah, in one observation, the cat has died. In the other observation, the cat is dead. And you don't know. The uncertainty is that you don't know until you observe the cat out of the box. Okay.
Right.
Now,
right.
In Hugh Everett's interpretation, there's one universe that has a live cat. There's another universe that has a dead cat. That every time there's an event, then you have a split off of universes in the quantum world. I know it's a very hard concept to grasp, but
yeah, very hard for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, both realities, you know, they take a separate path, and reality will be totally different than what it would be in the other universe.
Yeah. But some of the difficulty is our perceptions. You know, we perceive time in a completely different way than it happens. And, you know, all you have is now, really. And what you think is history is just your recollection.
Where you are along a certain point.
Yeah, your recollection of the now at that time that it happened. You know, it's...
Right.
You know,
well, nobody is really completely, in my mind, actually defined the concept of time.
I mean,
we can't grab onto it. We can't, you know, we can't change it. We can't alter it. At least we don't know how to at this point. And, you know, we have a hell of a time staying on time, let alone doing anything with it, you know?
Yes.
Hey, Jack, they did a very good experiment. You know, of course, Einstein said that the faster you go,
right,
time slows down.
Time slows down, yeah.
Time dilation.
Well, they actually did that with jets where they had,
right,
like, you know, very sensitive, like, atomic registering timepieces,
right,
that were,
right,
synchronized when the plane took off.
Right.
But because it's flying at, you know, 600 miles an hour,
mm-hmm,
the time actually slowed down within that jet versus those who were on land.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And,
absolutely.
That was an experiment that said, here's proof that Einstein...
Well, your GPS satellites compensate for time dilation.
Oh,
there you
wow.
go. There
yeah,
you go.
I mean, to get the accuracy they need, they have to actually compensate for the dilation,
mm-hmm,
of time due to velocity of their travel.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a proven point that Einstein's time dilation. And also, it's not only time dilation, but length dilation and mass dilation.
Yeah.
One thing that's not brought up, that as you approach the speed of light,
mm-hmm,
mass approaches infinity.
Okay.
Right.
And the length approaches zero.
What physical or non-physical or metaphysical realm are dreams? When we lose consciousness to the conscious, what we think is a conscious life, we have an unconscious life that we penetrate or we actually craft, like lucid dreamers do. I think you could talk about that, can't you, David?
I think I can.
That's kind of a different
no,
thing.
No, I mean,
but...
dreams are activity of synaptic firings, and,
right,
you know, there's been a lot of speculation that synaptic firings are, in a way, manipulating the quantum fields, that there is some quantum physics involved in the thought process.
Interesting.
Now, how that may apply to, you know, some of the books that bring out the factor of, you know, a little bit of woo there. I, you know, some of it's good, some of it's not, but... But there is a lot of things that are just not explained right now,
mm-hmm,
and it may be a point that we never can explain them. There's a lot of things
the
in the quantum field that don't make sense.
Time traveling is also very much fascinated me over the years. Ever since I first saw the movie, H.G. Wells' The Time Machine,
yeah.
I never thought of the concept until I saw that movie, and I was just enthralled with it. And about a year later came on that one-year TV program, The Time Tunnel, about a secret government project that...
I remember that.
Spending guys back in time and couldn't bring them back and all that stuff. I mean, that was it was just fascinating stuff. And boy, oh man, my God. Future, past, everything. Nothing was held back. They did it all. The very concept of it just blew my mind. And
there actually
I'd love
is some
to
designs
to
for time machines right now.
But,
I mean, NASA has a couple of designs. They
yeah.
also have a couple of warp drives similar to the Star Trek.
Star Trek, yeah, that's very interesting.
And in theory, there's no reason why they couldn't work.
Yeah, the man who worked on the ion propulsion was really he was a South American immigrant that came to this country. So for those who are telling of the immigrants from Latin America to go home, they need to take another look, because the man is working up at MIT and he is putting together the photonic, the ion propulsion. Sorry, the ion propulsion drive.
Right, and that's going to revolutionize space travel someday. It already has to a certain extent.
Absolutely.
You lost the IM propulsion. Describe it.
Well, regular propulsion involves rocket fluid or some kind of fluid that has to be burned.
Yeah, or solid.
And
you have
to do something like that to be able to escape the Earth's gravity to get into space. This involves firing of I don't know. Maybe David, you could
ions
or Wayne.
Yeah,
ions.
What you're doing is heating up the ions.
Ions. Yeah.
Go ahead, Dave.
And the thing to remember is that in space, you know, you can have an engine that doesn't have huge amounts of acceleration, but if you had something that constantly delivers a plus, eventually it's going to get to the point where that is moving at incredible speeds, and that's one of the concepts for the ion drive. An ion is just a loose electron, and it's shooting them out to back, and with every force you get equal and opposite force, and from that shooting ion out, you get a little bit of push.
And as time goes on, it becomes an exponential factor, too.
That's right, yeah. It has an exponential factor to it. The warp drive that I was talking about, it's Alcubierre's warp drive, and theoretically it's the math is proven, but it's one of those things that just needs to be worked out.
You know, we first heard of warp drives, at least the common people first heard of warp drives during the 1966 debut of Star Trek. That's a long time ago, but I mean, obviously somebody was thinking about that, to plant that in one of Gene Roddenberry's scripts. Where did the concept of warp drives come from?
Well, if you think of getting from point A to point B, and since Einstein says you can't go faster than the speed of light, and say this point B is a long ways away, how are you going to get there? You can't go faster than the speed of light, and you'll die of old age before you get very far.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But if you imagine A and B being on a piece of paper, and suddenly you fold
the paper,
point B
closer
to point
together,
A, you're warping space-time.
Yeah,
then
okay.
That allows you to thwart Einstein's theory and get
who came
point
up with
B.
That thought?
That's very well.
It's the space-time continuum is what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dave, let me kind of interject here and kind of put this idea. People can look at this. The Earth, in what we think is space, but it's really time-space continuum, think of it like you're laying on a mattress. Your mass, your body, is causing an indent in that mattress. Henceforth, where you're sinking in, you're actually pulling the sides together. So you have shortened up the distance from point A, the right side of the bed, to point B, the left side of the bed.
Okay.
And the heavier and the more distortion you can make in the time-space continuum, i.e. adding more weight in the middle of the mattress, you're pulling it closer together.
Right.
That's how you're kind of getting into a potential
warp drive. Example.
Well, there is an example, except for a black hole. That's the thing,
well,
is that the warp drive,
issue,
they require a tremendous amount of energy, and that's one of the stumbling blocks. Wormholes, I think, is what they require.
That's right, yeah.
But, it's one thing to prove it mathematically. It's another to actually come out with a 2014
viable application of it,
Another thing to think about, too, is none of us that we know of have ever encountered anybody that has come through a wormhole that we know about.
You know?
They've never admitted to it. You know?
How would you know?
Yeah,
how
see, that's the point. They would have to tell you.
There is a particular, I guess they call it a paradox, a grandfather paradox, and it's brought up many times in the fictions and the movies and stuff like that. And that paradox is that a person that in the future builds a time machine, goes back in the past, and say he purposely or accidentally kills his grandfather.
Right.
If that happens, suddenly disappear because he no longer exists because his grandfather never made his parents and so on?
Exactly. Yeah.
Also, to speak of wormholes, that's another theory for the quantum field. Again, where I say a quark will condensate and evaporate, there's those that say could be just jumping through a wormhole from one reality to another.
Interesting.
Yeah, there is. That's been another speculation. That's how it works. Yeah,
it's been another speculation. Uh-huh.
Well, that's
there is another I've read from Feynman. He developed a timeline. Feynman diagrams is what they're called. Mm-hmm. And in his diagrams, there's a possibility where a electron and an anti-electron, antimatter, strike,
mm-hmm.
producing a, I forget what kind of particle it was, but that particle goes back in time
and
I've produces heard of that. The very particle that caused it to go back in time.
Wow, yeah.
Mathematically, it's possible for it to do it, but it's hard to get your mind wrapped around it.
Sounds like a perpetual motion machine.
Like it's what?
No, not really.
Perpetual motion machine?
No, because you still have an exchange of energy, a loss of energy every time something like that happens, a release of energy.
Everything balances out. Yeah.
Yes, exactly right. There was something else.
But anyway, getting back to the multiverse concept, which is going from the very super small quantum, what we're talking about, to the wide universe or multiverses. An interesting concept, and I brought it up in that post that I wrote at Roundtree 7, something called quantum immortality. Say you are in a universe that, a person's wanting to commit suicide. He takes a pistol, and he puts the pistol to his head, and he pulls the trigger. Instantly, when that occurs, according to Hugh Everett's Many Worlds interpretation, one person in one universe dies, another person in another universe lives because of whatever. Maybe the pistol misfired. Or
interesting,
So the person that's alive, he tries it again. And right when he tries it again, immediately the universe is split off. In one universe, a person dies, another universe, the person still lives because of some other reason.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, eventually, no matter how many times you try, in one universe, there's going to be one person, the suicide attempter is going to be still alive.
Alive, yeah.
Because all the branches, it keeps on branching.
Interesting.
And so it becomes a strange concept of quantum immortality. Where no matter what this person does, he can't kill himself.
He can't kill himself. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Now,
interesting.
Here's another thing I'm bringing up, and this is where I was where David has said, with the string theories, where there's a lot of these, far-reaching, mind-boggling concepts that can be proven mathematically. I want you to come back to the Higgs boson was proven to be there and could be that the God particle was predicted decades before they actually were able to make the collider to actually find it. So if it's there mathematically, and of course many of Einstein's, the dark holes, he mathematically says there's got to be dark holes out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we have since then discovered them. Now that's several decades later. So, if the math says it's there and it works out, in good time, as we go on and we get smarter and we are educated, I think we're going to find out a lot of this stuff can be done and we can discover it.
Well, you bring up a point where the Guth and Lindy, their theory of inflation, they predicted a certain background radiation pattern.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they modeled that pattern. And just recently, probably 2 decades ago, NASA sent up a satellite that had the instrumentation that was able to measure that background radiation, and that measured pattern identically. I mean, it was like you could overlay them, and they looked exactly the same as what was predicted according to inflationary theory. So that was a plus for that theory that the math was right.
Yeah, I was going to say if the math comes out equal and proves itself, your mathematical proofs. In good time, and as we get educated and be able to do it, we will be able to realize that it is accurate and find the evidence of the mathematical aspects being correct.
Yeah. It doesn't mean that things aren't going to be adjusted in the future, but that's science. You always are adjusting based on your current knowledge and measured facts.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was the COBE, I guess, is what the satellite was, COBE, C-O-B-E. anyway.
Very interesting. It came back with all of that news, and wasn't that the same one where they recalculated the Big Bang?
Well, they had evidence of the Big Bang.
That's a curious thing. It brought it more into the theory about something called dark energy. It was mentioned before, but this is another thing that people can't wrap their head around, is that of our universe, 74% of the universe is dark energy, 22% of it is dark matter, and only 4% of our perceived universe is what we think it is now. I mean, the other 96% is stuff that we can't measure, we haven't seen.
It shows you how limited our lives really are.
Right, well, and I get back to the spectrum lights. There's one vision, you know, one frequency of light we can see. But there's many other frequencies of that exact same energy, microwaves, whatever, we don't see. We know they're there now, but, you know, 100 years ago, it wasn't.
Wait a minute.
Yeah,
Jeff.
Eventually we'll probably be able to measure it. But, you know, just like the Empire State Building that I talked about earlier, it's, you know, the actual Empire State Building is almost all nothing. It's just space.
Well, one minute, though. There are people that do see other spectrums of light. I mean, people that see colored fields around other people's commonly called auras that can be photographed and confirmed, if you will. That is somebody who has been able to see other spectrums of light, like dogs see different.
Okay, that's a very good point, Gwen. For instance, a bumblebee doesn't see a flower, you know, as we would. He sees the ultraviolet reflection of that light coming off of there. So that's a very good point.
Humans see by something called rods and cones.
Right.
I forget how many rods and cones we have, but it allows us to see all the cover. Now, interesting, there's a creature called the mantis shrimp that can see from below what we have as visible light to well above. I think that we have like 6 rods and cones, if I'm not mistaken. And the mantis shrimp has 17. So they can see millions of colors that we're not even perceptive of.
Wow.
Right.
Well up into the ultraviolet spectrum. And
no matter how much acid we take.
Exactly.
That is interesting, though. Yeah,
you know what's going on there? When you shut down all of the other physical, all of the physical input, which is what a psychotropic drug will do, it'll dampen down all your physical input, and you're left to your own mind, as it were, and more synapses start spreading across parts of the brain that are not commonly used. That's what produces the trip. And who's to say what validity or what value it possesses, what reality it engages with? I think that's a very interesting conversation, too.
Interesting, and
a good point to bring up is that they have done experiments where they have a spin of particle and its sister particle is the opposite spin, and then they can separate those particles by an infinite amount. Say they put it on the other side of the universe, and when they change that spin of the first particle, the spin on the second particle will instantly change.
Right.
Nobody knows what the connection is between those two particles.
There is, and
that actually has been proven. They've done that through an experiment called Bell inequality, but it's like Feynman said, if you understand quantum mechanics, you just don't know what you're talking about because nobody understands it completely.
That's right.
You know,
I
saw a lady who I forget her name now, but she used to work at CNN of all places, and now she's involved in something completely different. She is advocating the use of hallucinogenics like psilocybin and mushrooms and things like that. And I only saw a little tiny brief thing on TV, and then the show changed or I changed it or whatever. I can't remember, but it just, you know, because LSD and all that stuff's been illegal in this country since 1966. And prior to that, you know, people were tripping out, and then they had all the false hallucinogenics that came after that. But the pure, you know, lysergic acid has been, you know, unobtainable really legally in this country for a very long time. But she was advocating openly the, and she had some organization, I can't remember what it is now, but at any
rate.
There's
a lot of research that says that psychotropics have a lot of benefit.
Very good benefit, she was saying.
Very good benefit in the mental research and
yes.
Schizophrenia and other things. You know, unfortunately, it was banned as far as getting funding or even any kind of
worldwide
lysergic diaphenamide 25 for research
it's all
purposes.
Banned. Yeah, exactly. And she's trying
to
resurrect
all that stuff's coming back though, and I'm glad to see it because I think it has a lot of validity.
People
psychotropics.
I've worked with a homeopathic application of psilocybin. I decant it myself. I live next to the cow patties, guys.
That's right.
I've also created a ayahuasca tea, and I make a homeopathic application of that. And I think you probably know what homeopathy is to it. It's taking the actual substance itself and creating a one millionth particle that is that opposite effect that will assist you to, and it assists a lot of people with introduction to opening up to that kind of an experience. And then, of course, you step through the door and you work with the plant matter itself. I'm not into chemicals. The plants, though, are highly curative. And there has been, as David said.
Good point. And, you know, we're locked into this pharmaceutical nonsense in this country where everything's got to be FDA approved and that's all corrupt anyway.
And
it's
and
insane,
stuff.
You know? And yeah, obviously you don't want people just sniffing or snorting everything that comes in sight, but you got to have some kind of control somewhere. But this lady was advocating a lot of things that, and she was saying that a lot of things are very beneficial, but they're just frowned upon by the current establishment because they can't make money off them. That was the whole point.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, the thing is I certainly wouldn't recommend LSD as a recreational drug, but...
No, and neither was she. That's right.
I mean, I think as far as mind expansion and and nothing short of a religious experience, if I want to use a religious, you know...
Right,
It has certainly
Many
been
Many people
proven.
Have described it as such, yeah.
Absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Gwen talking about tapping into other segments of the mind that aren't normally tapped into.
Well, that's
right.
One of the things that's different in my studies and what I studied also in college in parapsychology, as they called it then. They call it psi science now. And you know, people will say it's valid or it isn't valid, but then again, H.G. Wells was reading, and Jules Verne were writing about the future, and it came to pass. The point here is that plants, psychotropic plants especially, do open a doorway into the inner self, and there we can address our issues, most of our emotional issues. This is where we get the stories of things like Wolfsbane and the cures for the beast. Or the, you know, the werewolf, but it's really the beast that the original, in the original myth. And so this is how you cure the beast. Well, the old village healer knew what the plant would do and knew that they could use it to help people who were maybe criminally ill at the time. We're talking hundreds of years ago.
Right.
When they, and that was state of the art then, and it was outlawed then by the church, but and made into a horror story. You know,
that's what they've done. Anything they can't make a profit off of, or that they don't own outright, they want to twist it in people's minds so that people won't use it, and they want to make it illegal. They want to control it. It's something that's maybe free occurring in nature. They want to control it so that they can eventually make a profit off it. And if they can't, then they'll deny it to everybody. It's just crazy.
The DMT.
Well, I might, you know, at the lack of sort of diverging off the off topic, the LSD wouldn't have been around if it hadn't been for all the CIA research about it in the 1950s and contracting all the colleges. That's actually how it came about.
Yeah,
in
and
the
then
States.
Yeah, and that Timothy Leary gained his fame and did all his trips and all that.
Yeah,
stuff.
He was at Harvard. You know, he was
yeah,
doing
right.
stuff for the CIA.
Incredible. Yeah. Yep.
Well,
yep.
And didn't
Sandow's
Aldous Huxley?
Sandow's dad is the one that made it.
Yeah, and didn't Aldous Huxley, his book Doors of Perception,
yeah,
basically refer to all that and
yeah,
and touch base.
Wasn't that regarding
yeah,
Kate Coyote
a lot
or something?
Of it. I mean, it was a society sort of like 1984, but it had a lot of drugs for societal control and.
Are you talking
like
about
that.
Brave New World now?
Well, Brave
New
World.
World.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you go.
Well, before
oh,
that,
yeah.
back in the 50s,
Doors of Perception and.
Doors of Perception,
yeah.
which was basically
right.
more of a science paper versus a science fiction.
Exactly.
Brave
you know,
New
it,
World.
It brings, you know, this is this, and the thing is that's the way it is with any time the subject of quantum and the universe, you really start to get into what becomes reality. I mean,
right, exactly.
like, I bring up something called Oculus Rift, this virtual reality thing that is coming out as a gaming system that's supposed to be so realistic that it can actually fool people. But the thing is that is what is reality? If reality is only perception, then and some people have brought this up, that maybe the whole universe is a simulation.
Yeah.
Wow.
yeah.
We're all inside a simulation. I mean, if you had a computer program that was sufficient to run
yeah.
all the,
we're all
the
in
rules
the
of physics.
We're all just living in the holodeck.
Yeah. funny thing is, there hasn't been anybody that can prove that it's not.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, the thing is I know a lot of scientists are actually working on a biological processor.
Yeah.
But in essence, you know, like getting
IBM
down into the nanotechnology aspects. Yeah, mm-hmm. the nanotechnology mm-hmm. aspects.
There's a whole cosmology dedicated to that one, nanotech and human consciousness merging.
Oh, absolutely.
It really does boil down to, I mean, that's why quantum physics has gotten so popular on my side of the street and every place else with all of the different, and places like the Institute for Noetic Sciences and that kind of thing, because it comes down to consciousness, defining consciousness or trying to, you know, butterfly net it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and the thing is there's not sufficient data as how the brain works and what is consciousness and for some people,
we only
people,
know one tiny part of our brain. A lot of it isn't being used that we are aware
that's
of.
That's right, yeah.
I don't think
maybe there is some sort of quantum processor that's going on.
There could be.
I know.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I simply mm-hmm. don't think my consciousness is going on within my physical anatomy. I think my physical anatomy is just the vehicle, the speaking tube for my consciousness, which is in another portion of the ethers, if you will. From my point of view, it's within my mental body of consciousness, which is above me. It's outside of the physical. It's mm-hmm. another form of connection to a higher plane.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
when you get down to explaining all of that, the energy medicine, as it's called today, it's thousands of years old. It's very Eastern and Ayurvedic, and yet it penetrates. Have you ever read Fruja Capra's Tao of Physics? David or
yes.
or
yeah, I have that book, yeah.
Yeah.
I have several of those books.
He broken a few lights open for people, you know. He put it into some
Yeah,
plans.
I did. I mean, that's one of the best ones. There's some other books that sort of really take it out there that I don't really agree with, but yeah, he did explain and you know, one of the things that even Freud and Carl Jung brought this up was synchronicity, how things occur that are unexplained, you know, like, for instance, you walk towards a door, right, as someone's getting ready to knock on it, or you pick up a phone before it rings, and, you know, there's a lot of strange things there, synchronicity that are not explainable, and who knows, maybe it's some sort of quantum reality
realization.
That's interaction.
Yeah.
Synchronicity is a lot about what goes around and comes around, and you can experiment with it yourself on a daily basis. If you walk out the door, even if you had a rough morning getting up, if you walk outside your door, before you go to your office or wherever you go to do your business or just to begin your day, and you say, you know what, I'm going to decide that the first person I run into, I'm going to have a pleasant expression for, I'm going to smile, and I'm going to feel good about today just because it makes me feel better. You are going to run into much better conditions because you're going to attract that. You're going to affect other people in your environment with how you are putting energy out. I don't know how else to put it, how you play it out, your behavior pattern. Maybe that's
karma.
I like the word energy because when you say energy, then you imply not just the way you say something, not just saying something, but the way you present it and the intentions that you emote or feel when you do it. I think it has a powerful, I think it's very much physics. It's very powerful.
Well, that thing I mentioned before with the spin and the two particles, that's called quantum entanglement.
Mm-hmm.
Some people call it spooky quantum entanglement for obvious reasons, but it obviously happens. It's been proven to happen, and nobody can explain it. Suppose if the brain had some sort of subatomic quantum function about it, maybe there is some entanglement with other particles. Who's to say? I mean, there's a lot of unknowns out there that...
It's just common sense, though. If you treat people nice, people are going to treat you nice. And when you run into that one person that doesn't, you have a choice again to allow it to screw your day up or to go on and say, fuck you, you don't matter, I'm going to continue to have a good day.
Mm-hmm.
And people who adopt these kinds of deliberate behavior patterns and allow them to flow through, they really do live better lives. They live longer lives, more healthier lives, and their relationships are generally happier, yes. And it's just the truth. You don't need drugs to do that.
Who amongst us have an experience where suddenly you think about your sister or your brother or your father, and then you receive a phone call 30 minutes later about something important that's happened to them?
Right.
That's happened to me. And is that a coincidence that you just happen to stick in your mind more than your day-to-day existence? Or is that actually something beyond a coincidence? Some people say there isn't any coincidences.
There aren't, I don't think. But you know what side of the street I'm on, guys. So I kind of, I like the science because it in the Missourian attitude, it shows me. You understand?
Yeah.
But it does not detract from me understanding my own experiences and giving them full value. And sometimes I have to shut up and sit back and go, well, wait a minute, I got to think about that.
It gets back to the multiverses too. You know, say the four of us were playing cards, and I was dealing it out, and I gave you four kings, Gwen, and other players got four queens and four jacks and whatever. Okay, that would seem like a very strange coincidence, but if I eventually kept on dealing and just kept on and kept on, eventually that same arrangement would occur.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
yeah.
So if you think about that, then that's sort of the same thing as the universe. Eventually, of all the universes, one just like ours is going to occur.
Uh-huh.
You have to think in terms of the infinite and probabilities, it's just, you know, a very fascinating subject.
It's real. It is. It's very mind-boggling, to be honest with you. I have to do a lot of very deep thought after our show today, because it's a lot of it's escaping me. There's a lot of dark energy in my brain that hasn't been tapped yet.
The truth is that if the science can evolve enough, I think everybody says, you know, not everybody, I'm saying it's a bad way to say this, a lot of people feel that technology is taking us away from paying attention to our communities and paying attention to what's going on in the world around us. I think that the absolute opposite is true of technology myself.
I think it depends on the person.
There, yes, yes, There you go.
Yeah.
Some people are easily distracted and, oh, I'm going to dabble in this now and to hell with everything else. And other people, hey, how can I apply this to my block or my neighborhood or my city?
Absolutely.
You know? Oh, you know, Dave, this is really off the point here, but it made me think of it. You take somebody like Elon Musk who, you know, he was told he couldn't build a rocket to, you know, shuttle back, you know, it takes the government to do it. And he's like, no, I'm going to go ahead and do it. Can't build an electric car. He's building an electric car. And then along with this electric car, I just read where they are producing from beach sand their own lithium-ion battery material, the lithium aspects.
Yeah.
And because they're producing it, it has three times the storage and longevity of a naturally occurring lithium.
Cool.
Wow.
And, of course, this is going to revolutionize cell phones. You know, you got to charge your cell phone up once a day.
A lot of things,
Electric
cars have always been about the storage.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, the motors have been there for a long time, but electric cars have always been about the storage, you know,
right.
Getting the storage lightweight and having the range of...
And
you know,
I'm sure
the
fossil fuel industry will oppose that every step of the way.
Well, let's see. This is what
they want easy money right now. They don't want anything interfering.
Exactly.
It's an interesting... Right. What's really interesting here is when you look at the evolution of the human species, It took millennia for the Homo sapien to arrive, and the Homo sapien came along in a real short. We got smart real fast. In retrospect, but you take a look at technology and industrialization, and take a look at how quickly things have advanced there. I mean, in technology now. It's only months at a time before the new, quicker version is out.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Insane,
exponential.
Yeah.
I have people sometimes getting the product out before it's obsolete.
Right.
Those equations of time and manifestation of you know, the evolution of the species, if you will, those equations should be on people's minds right now, and people should, you know, bright people should, and I think a lot of us are asking what's going on, what's close to us right now, because I don't think anybody who's actually thinking on a holistic level, and by holistic I'm not talking about wellness here, I'm talking about like maybe what Krell was talking about with Toe, the theory of everything, what is close to us? What are we close to? Because I think we're close to either a large, actually not either or, but of course there's both ways you could go. In one universe, we're going to evolve to the next level. In another universe, we're going to blow our asses up. Correct, David?
De-evolution. Well, there's also got to be a de-evolution factor in there too.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, something to think about, maybe the technology is not the best thing. Maybe the technology is what's going to eventually kill us. Or maybe the technology will be sufficiently superior to bring us above our own stupidities.
That could be. Good. Yeah, we don't know. The possibilities are endless, really.
Yeah.
They're what we make.
I tend to think the de-evolution, the embracing of wanted ignorance, it'll be almost like the Spanish Inquisition with the Tea Party.
Let's hope it's a temporary aberration.
Yeah.
Well,
that's what I'm hoping.
In my own humble opinion, I'm surprised we got past the 50s without killing ourselves. I mean, seriously, you know, there's so many instances where.
Well, I was
going to
say, I don't know how old you are, David, but I'm old enough to remember well the Cuban Missile Crisis.
I would have been about
11 years old. People were building bomb shelters in the neighborhood on the suburbs of Baltimore.
Yeah, that was the end thing to do, man. You got to have your own bomb shelter.
That's right.
It was definitely something that people really felt they needed, and poor people that couldn't build one, you know, that was the way it was.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah,
but
maybe there's a universe out there where the Cuban Missile Crisis occurred and we did destroy the world. You know,
that's another great thing. We've had the common sense by hook or by crook, I don't know how, but we've had the common sense to not have dropped another atomic warhead on a populated area since Nagasaki in 1945. Thank God that that has not happened. We came so close to the Cuban Missile Crisis.
We came right to the brink,
and we scared ourselves. We scared the whole world.
I was going to say, that would have been a mutual annihilation.
Exactly.
Because both of us had enough to blow the whole world up over several times.
Oh, exactly.
So it wouldn't have just been Russia and the United States. The nuclear winters that would have affected everything. You know,
exactly.
We were very, very close to trying
to
destroy humanity.
We were very, very close, yeah. And thank God we cooler heads prevailed at the right moment in time. And let's hope that this continues, or maybe mankind or humankind will find another equally devastating object that it'll misuse at the beginning, or we don't know. You know, the future is unforeseen. We don't know. All we can do is guard against evil, bad things, and try and make good things prevail. That's all we can do.
Yeah, hoping that our angels of better nature will prevail. You know, that's
exactly.
The thing is the future is scary in so many ways, but the future holds so much promise.
It does. It's exciting. It's an exciting time to be alive, even
it
with
is.
All the regression we see.
It is.
Evolution still continues on. I mean, where we are right now is not the end of mankind. There will be Homo sapiens 2.0 at some point in time in the future.
Let's hope so. Let's hope we don't annihilate ourselves first.
But without all the bugs that Windows have.
Let's hope we don't annihilate ourselves first.
Tell you guys, I'm not worried about it. I know I've been here before. I'll be here again. And
there you go. I was going to say, we'll come back around again.
We are at the end of the hour, guys. So,
fascinating topics today, David.
The hour went by too quick, Dave.
It really did.
Yeah, it was fun.
It sure
Absolutely.
Was.
So many things we covered.
You bet, man.
Absolutely.
Come back again anytime.
From the smallest to the largest.
Then, but always do.
That's right. We did, didn't we?
Well, I'm going to urge everybody, like I do every week, to keep thinking and pushing forward. That's the only way we can go is forward. We can't go backwards. So we've got to keep that up.
Keep the progressive mindset, because that's where progress comes from.
That's right.
Not conservatism.
No. Not reactionaryism.
Reactionaryism.
Do we each get to say do we each have a clever saying?
Yeah.
You can't keep a good dog off your leg.
There you go. Especially a pet bull. So.
Well, Glenn, thank you for a wonderful show, and David and everybody, good to talk with you. We'll do it again next week. Looking forward to it. And undoubtedly we'll have something equally beneficial to talk about and equally interesting. So thanks for listening, listeners, and we look forward to your input and to hearing from all of you in one way or another next week and beyond.
All right. Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you, David. This has been the Sunday Show with Jack Jodell, Wayne Johnson. David Williams was our guest today, and we are sponsored
Gwen Berry,
by
Gwen Berry.
And Gwen Berry. Yeah, okay, that was good. We are sponsored by Roundtree 7, the number 7.com, and the Saturday Afternoon Post. Take a look for Jack's posts out there. They're very good. Thank you, gentlemen. And that's our show for this week. Thank you for listening, whether it's been archived. Bye, Jack.
Bye later. Take care, Gwen. Have a great week, and best of wishes to everybody. Keep pushing forward. Talk to you next time.
Night, Jack.
Yep. Good night.